Taxpod, der Steuerpodcast.
Yeah, welcome to this new Taxpod episode. After we have been into the nitty-gritty details of German real estate transfer taxes in our last episode, we want to now obviously broaden our horizon not only to more policy-related issues but also to another jurisdiction, to the United States. And I will leave the introduction of our topic and our guest to Jens in a while, but let me welcome you warmly, Lauren Pond from Washington, to this podcast.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us, Lauren. Lauren Pond, she is a partner with Mitchell Chevalier. It's a Washington, D.C.-based tax law firm, put it like this. It's kind of big tax boutique like we are. And she's not only a partner, she's also a member of the executive committee of the law firm. And Lauren works on international tax matters, and we work both together on some interesting issues we would like to talk also today about. And welcome, Lauren.
Thank you, Jens. Thank you. Happy to be here. I do have to say some of my colleagues would be very upset if I did not mention that we do tax and other things. So I'm in the tax department, but we are indeed a boutique firm here in D.C. focusing primarily on issues that affect or are affected by the federal government. So tax is certainly chief among them, but also Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, anti-bribery, AML, anti-money laundering, trade, white-collar crime, and a multitude of other topics. So I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here. We are going to focus on tax today, specifically. Are we going to preview what we're going to talk about? Section 49.
We are also talking about Section 49. But as you are in Washington, of course, we would like to talk about some new developments which are going to take place in the U.S. And there is especially one I would like to talk about, which is, I think, you said, Section 899.
Oh, yes.
And it deals with, specific topic, put it like this. Maybe you can give us some more insight.
Sure. So Chairman Smith, Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, the committee in Congress on the House side, where all tax bills originate, that's according to the Constitution. So all tax bills originate within Ways and Means. He unveiled a piece of proposed legislation in May, so end of May, that includes new Section 899, so a new section in the Internal Revenue Code that is aimed at taxing U.S. companies of or U.S. businesses of foreign headquartered companies that are resident in jurisdictions that enact extraterritorial or discriminatory taxes. And so new Section 899 would do a lot of things, chief among them, ratchet up the tax rate 5 percentage points for every year that the extraterritorial or discriminatory tax remains on the books of the foreign jurisdiction. So in the first year, the tax would be an additional 5%, second year 10%, so on and so forth, until all the way up to an additional 20% tax imposed on these U.S. companies, U.S. businesses. So that is dramatic, certainly. I think the definitions of extraterritorial and discriminatory.
That would be my question, Lauren. What's the reason for our podcast to talk about an extraterritorial tax? Because we are not going to apply those taxes, I would assume. But that's my question, Lauren.
Yeah, most people would never do such a thing as impose an extraterritorial income tax. So the bill, I think, primarily is meant to signal our displeasure with the fact that the U.S. has signed on to Pillar 2 negotiations or was a primary participant in those negotiations. And part of Pillar 2 framework, of course, includes the under-tax profits rule, which would come into into force in 2024, with the exception of South Korea, which is, or 2025, with the exception of South Korea, which is slated to impose their UCPR next year, 2024. This is important because the U.S. has not done what it sought out to do at the beginning of the negotiations, which is conform some of our international tax principles so that they more closely resemble an income inclusion rule under the Pillar 2 framework. And so now we are in a position where U.S. multinationals are potentially subject to the imposition of the under-tax profits rule by other countries, meaning that the U.S., by definition, is going to be watching some tax dollars go out of the country, which is generally not the direction we like to see them go. So this bill is meant to signal displeasure with that, but also I think some other novel taxes, novel extraterritorial taxes. We've seen that language used in the final foreign tax credit regulations that were solidified at the end of 2022. And so those rules, this proposed legislation really seeks to call out taxes that we feel are unfairly target U.S. multinationals. And that is the rhetoric of some of members of Congress who have gone on to make statements like, we don't want U.S. multinationals to be unfairly targeted by these provisions. And so, you know, if we look at the definition of discriminatory, it's pretty broad in the proposed legislation. And you might think, and I might think, you know, reading just on its face, extraterritorial, that would sweep Section 49 into the purview of this rule. But really, I think Section 49 would fall more squarely under the definition of discriminatory. Particularly, particularly with regard to, so there are four components of what might be discriminatory under the bill. And one is the tax is exclusively or predominantly applicable in practice or by its terms to non-resident individuals and foreign corporations or partnerships. So if you think about Section 49, we would observe that given the recent legislative changes that Parliament undertook at the end of last year, the continued retroactive application to related party payment primarily affects U.S. multinationals. And so under this definition, we have either, you know, predominantly affects non-resident corporations, either by its terms or in practice. And so one might say Section 49 on its face is neutral. It doesn't say, you know, this tax, this withholding is only going to be applied to non-resident German entities. And in fact, I believe Section 49 was really meant to be an exit tax for German multinational companies. So there's no reference to residents or, you know, German versus non-German companies. But in effect, that's what we have. And so you might think, well, that could certainly sweep in Section 49.
Yeah, which is really interesting, because what I've heard from the Germans, at least, is that, I think they know that Section 899 is coming, or might be coming, mm-hmm. but they didn't expect to have Section 49 in the limelight. But what I've heard is that they are now informed, and that they know that, even Germany might be targeted by this rule, and which would be for our companies, would be a disaster, and they would be subject to this additional taxes in the U.S.
And I should say that this rule is pretty limited in that it applies in situations where you have, you wouldn't think of like a true U.S. subsidiary of a German company. They would not be subject to these kinds of rules because they're already in the U.S. and they're paying taxes. And there has been apparently, the rumor mill suggests that Congress, or at least the Ways and Means Republicans, didn't want to go so far as to increase the tax rates on businesses that are actually operating here as subs, keeping in mind that those companies do employ Americans and you don't want to disadvantage them so much so that they reconsider their foreign direct investment choices and really think about whether it is worth the tax burden to be doing business in the U.S. and the structure in which they're doing it. And so it is a somewhat limited application because of the provisions under which this additional tax would apply, generally without going in too deep into U.S. tax principles. But it does have to deal with, entities and non-resident alien individuals, so who are subject to U.S. tax but not necessarily operating a traditional business in the form of a subsidiary that we would think of, or in the instance of income that's effectively connected to a U.S. trade or business, so pulling in some other income that wouldn't normally be within the purview of what subsidiary.
Lauren, maybe one question about how this section actually functions. Can I understand it as a section that puts Germany, I mean, assumed that Section 49 were some extraterritorial taxation, puts Germany sort of on a blacklist and everyone who's a target of this Section 899 is actually hit by it? Or is it only individual taxpayers that have suffered extraterritorial taxation from Germany and they are sort of punished in the United States?
And who's deciding about the question who's on the blacklist?
Both very good questions. So it would be everyone who's defined in this statute. So not only individuals but also businesses that fall under certain provisions of the code under which they're taxed. So not every single entity that is necessarily parented by a German headquartered company, but under certain circumstances, non-resident alien individuals and branches or other entities that are subject to certain provisions of taxation under the code, generally at rates that start at 30%. So this would be pretty high, right? So 30 plus an additional 5 up to additional 20. Could be quite burdensome. And then the determination about what is extraterritorial or discriminatory is made really in conjunction with the Secretary of the Treasury. And so the provision notes that, the definition of extraterritorial or discriminatory is in the statute. That is black and white. That's the rule. But the provision calls for the Secretary of Treasury to kind of have three levels of escalated involvement with countries that are imposing these extraterritorial discriminatory taxes. So first would be to express concern and then urge repeal. and then after that, advise of the remedial action, one of the tools of remedial actions being these higher rates of tax, but there are others that the bill also sets forth. So it mentions that the president can make decisions about procurement. Who are we going to procure whatever we need as a government from, and who will we not be procuring from if certain of these taxes are at play? It also could have an impact on tax treaty negotiations, which is also something that's undertaken by Treasury. And it also calls for the U.S. Trade Representative and officials at the Department of Commerce to take into account whether or not discriminatory or extraterritorial taxes are in play in jurisdictions with whom we are considering free trade agreements or any other kind of executive agreement about trade. So this bill is, it's a new section in the tax code, but it does kind of go beyond tax in that it authorizes or permits other parts of the government to consider other ways in which we might take some remedial action as the bill frames it. Not retaliatory, remedial.
Definitely not.
But Laura, there's still a question, who decides about who's blacklisted? Is it the president? Because I think in the past, so I'll put it like this, as far as I know, Lauren, there was or there is already a rule which allows the President of the United States to act in case there are some extraterritorial taxes in foreign jurisdictions. And I think he is already in the position to punish those countries. And is my understanding correct that now it's no longer in the hands of the president, but maybe Treasury or the IRS decides about?
Well, that's true. So there is a provision in the code now that would allow for the doubling of the corporate tax rate. And so that would hit a lot more companies in a lot more draconian fashion, which is probably why it has not been invoked to date. It is kind of a bit of a nuclear option, if you will. Not something that we would resort to without careful consideration, I would imagine. And this is a little bit different in that it does ask for the secretary to give reports. First report is due within 90 days of the bill's enactment, and then every 180 days thereafter. And that report would have a list of the foreign countries that have one or more extraterritorial or discriminatory taxes. And so that is a bit of a bad list to find yourself on. And certainly I would imagine that the Treasury officials would rely on the definition of extraterritorial or discriminatory in the statute when determining whether or not those taxes run afoul of these provisions and which countries to include on the list.
That's interesting, yeah. But I think the new law, 899, is something for the future. And maybe Germany could end up on this bad list. But what do you think for the past? Would it still be possible? And for the past, I think, as we all know, we have a serious problem with the past. It is where we are from 2013 onwards. There's a big issue with US companies. And maybe give a short explanation why this affects US companies. It's not only U.S. companies are directly involved in license payments or in transfer of IP under Section 49. The U.S. is also affected by giving a tax credit either under the transition tax or under the GILTI tax or the normal U.S. tax. So it's possible that if the Germans apply the Section 49, that the U.S., they have to give a tax credit, a direct or indirect tax credit, on those extraterritorial German taxes. And that's my question. Would it also be possible, at least from a theoretical point of view, that the President of the United States can impose the old 899 to the past?
Oh, you mean the provision to double the corporate tax rate? I mean, I think that can be invoked whenever. You know, it doesn't matter that necessarily the imposition of 899 or Section 49 is retroactive, right? So we're looking at tax years 2013 to 2019-ish, which is certainly in the past. And those taxes arose because of some deferral structures that U.S. multinationals would often find themselves in, given our old tax system. So prior to 2017, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the U.S. was certainly the last major economy to be on a worldwide system of taxation, whereby everyone was subject to 35% corporate tax rate, but that rate only applied when the income that you earned offshore was repatriated. And so many U.S. multinationals would redeploy foreign earnings outside of the U.S. to avoid triggering that 35% tax. Oftentimes that involved royalties that were fully ex-U.S., so between entities that were wherever in the world, but not including royalty payments necessarily directly to the U.S. And so that is where a lot of the tax liability for Section 49 arises. Right. Because of these extra territorial, meaning not involving Germany and not involving the U.S. Royalty flows between companies that are certainly in the structure, the U.S. multinational structure, but not having a payment flow between either the U.S. or Germany. And hence the extraterritorial nature. The name is even extraterritorial. And so that's how these taxes arose. What we can do going forward really remains to be seen. As I mentioned, this is proposed legislation. This is certainly not expected to go anywhere in a divided Congress. So right now, the Republicans are in control of the House, which means, you know, Chairman Smith, as a Republican, controls the tax policy narrative within the Ways and Means Committee. However, on the Senate side, it's controlled by Democrats. Chairman Wyden is in charge of Senate Finance Committee, which is the tax writing committee on the Senate side. And there is, you know, no way that this proposed legislation has any chance of going anywhere in this Congress. Now, that being said, there are a couple things to consider. One, we have an election coming up next year. So who knows who will be in charge come January 2025. Two, this is out in the world. So once you have a tax proposal that has seen the light of day, you know, who knows what can happen to it a few years down the line. Nobody knows what the climate will be. And this rule, this proposed legislation is not necessarily what would actually pass. And so, you know, your questions about retroactive effect or can we impose these higher tax rates for in Section 49's case, for a bill, for a provision that has technically been repealed, but still has retroactive effect. Those could all be worked out in future iterations of the legislative text. So, you know, this is where we're starting, but should this provision actually breach enactment, this certainly is not where we would end up.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah? But you said under the new rule, 899, the Treasury Secretary is asked to consult those countries which are imposing discriminatory taxes. So what I've heard is that there are, or there might be, already some talks behind the scenes between the US and Germany, and I've even heard that even on the Hill, there are some discussions and some Republicans sending letters around and are a bit worried about the application of Section 49.
That is true. So June 8th, there was a letter from Representative Feenstra, who is also a member of the Ways and Means Committee, a Republican member of Ways and Means, and several of his colleagues to Secretary Yellen expressing concern over Section 49, the way that it has been imposed primarily against U.S. multinationals, and really making clear that this is another of, I would think he would equate it to another iteration of digital services taxes, where the intent was clearly to target U.S. multinational companies, and there was very little effort to disguise that, even though the rules on their face were neutral. You know, in by their terms, they only applied to U.S. multinationals for a large part. And similarly, the idea that Section 49, which was repealed going forward, except for tax haven cases, and, you know, maintained retroactively in the case of related party royalties related to German registered intellectual property, that sends a clear message, at least to the letter writers, that the rules were meant to target U.S. multinationals. And so, you know, the idea that we should stand by and let other countries come and kind of take dollars out of the FISC is not really what we want to be upholding. And so the letter asks Secretary Yellen for a briefing to say, you know, what have you guys been doing? What does the outreach to Germany look like? How are we getting any kind of resolution on this issue? What efforts have been made to date? Now,
we're not talking about a couple of dollars. We are talking about $1 billion we may take from the U.S. exchequer.
at least a billion. I think that
a couple of billions.
Yeah, several billion, which, you know, is not an insignificant sum. And you have to think about this in the broader context, right? So where is the economy going? We just had debt limit showdown where fiscal responsibility featured prominently. We can't keep spending without, you know, having dollars come in the door, you know, dollars in, dollars out. We want to have a balanced budget. And then we also had, I think last week or the week before, a Joint Committee on Taxation, which is responsible for scoring all of all tax provisions. So when I say scoring, I mean saying roughly how much the provision is expected to raise in terms of revenue or lose in terms of revenue over roughly a 10-year period or so. Their recent report was about Pillar 2. And the news was not good because the U.S. fisc will lose. It's a lose-lose situation, whether we eventually enact legislation to conform GILTI or other provisions to the income inclusion rule or not. We will lose revenue. The only question is how much. So if we change the law, we'll lose less. I know, we'll lose less, but if we don't, we'll lose more. So, you know, taking all of these things into account and then coming along and saying, well, Section 49, it's not that big of a deal. We'll just grant foreign tax credits for all the double taxation that's occurred. That's more money going out of the door. And so I do think that the climate is changing whereby we can't just say we're not going to engage on these issues and we're not going to try to get Germany to the table and really discuss the double tax aspects of the case. Not necessarily whether or not we think Section 49 in its substance is a good rule or not, but we do have double taxation. And so how can we resolve this under our treaty?
I agree. But the question is, Lauren, is there's so much noise around now, in at least in the US. So where is this all going to end up? So what do you think would be the result of this noise, those talks, and the provision 899?
Well, let me get out my crystal ball, Jens. I think...
Well, as you know, we are both working on this.
We are. I think all the pressure is good, right? So it says that we're paying attention. It says that we care. And it says that we expect Germany to be the treaty partner it is supposed to be and come to the table. Now, you know, 899 is certainly an arrow in our quiver. It's something that could ultimately be enacted. It's not anything that's going to come into force this year. So in the short term, does this proposed legislation do much other than signal discontent, displeasure with the provision? No. But does that mean that it's totally should be ignored? I wouldn't say so. I think that later on, you know, we don't know the outcome of next year's presidential election. A lot of congressional seats are up for grabs. So we don't know what the composition of Congress is going to be. We don't know who's going to be in the White House. And those are variables that could impact the likelihood of legislation like this actually getting onto the book. So I would not, if I were in Germany, think, oh, Section 899, that's never going to be, don't worry about it. I do think that it's something to consider. And like I said, you know, no tax idea ever really died. So, you know, once it's out in the world, it's out in the world. But short term, the pressure is really, I think, building toward at least getting the governments to the table to discuss. And that pressure is not going to go away because when members of Congress ask the Secretary of the Treasury for a briefing, you know, she can't show up and say, well, we haven't really engaged. You know, it's really asking for activity. What have you guys been doing? How are you trying to engage Germany? And that also helps. It informs the response that Congress might take. You know, if Treasury comes back and says, look, we have done everything we can do. We've asked for informal conversations. We've asked for provision, you know, remedies under the treaty to get Germany to the table. We've asked for, and they've stonewalled us at every turn. There's only so much we can do as a Treasury Department, even if we engage other, you know, Department of State, U.S. Trade Representative, other entities. If Germany continues to not engage, then I think that that will inform the response that Congress feels is necessary to take, because there are some things that certainly Congress can do or the president can do that agencies can't. And so I wouldn't ignore the pressure. And yeah, I wouldn't think that it will lead nowhere.
And the question is, Lauren, though, is how we as tax lawyers can support this process. Is there a possibility to help Germany and the U.S. to get to the table?
I think so. I mean, you know your counterparts in the German Ministry of Finance better than I do. But, you know, I think that any kind of conversations, we do have a treaty, number one. So it's not like there's not a remedy that's already been established for how to resolve double taxation. And so the answer can't be, we don't see any double taxation, because
that's impossible. Yeah.
That's not true, right? So all of this income that has been subject to Section 49 has already been subject to tax in the U.S. under a multitude of provisions, depending on the years at issue. Is it a pre-TCJA taxation? Is it a post-TCJA with transition tax? It's been taxed. Several ways.
I agree. At least in the past, Lauren, we have seen some cases in which the U.S. tax is even higher than the German Section 49 tax. So we have more than 15% tax in the U.S. And so the question is, so what's the reason, or how can you argue in favor for a tax that could be imposed on top of this U.S. tax then?
Right. It's excessive. And so they're going to have to come to the table. And I think from a German perspective.
Lauren, well, I think we're not disclosing in a secret that we're both working on some instruments, how we can support this process. So I know, Lauren, that you are working on an app request which is going to the US tax authorities, and I'm working with you together on a consultation request which we are going to send to the German tax authorities, and the hope is that they are both coming together. And I think in both these requests we show that there is a double taxation, and there of course is a conflict with international tax law, and we are showing that the primary taxing right is actually in the US. But even if they don't accept it, the Germans should at least give a tax credit for the US tax. So on this Section 49 tax, that should be the minimum.
Yes, right, exactly. To the extent that those royalties in question have not been subject to some kind of US tax, then sure. Why not impose withholding tax under Section 50 on those income streams? Now, I think at the end of the day, we will determine that that portion of royalty is very small. But that in theory, under the treaty and under generally accepted international tax principles, that's how those two provisions should operate in tandem, right? And so, yes, we're working on a MAP claim. We're working on the consultation procedure with the idea that from a taxpayer's perspective, that's the only remedy that you really have under our double tax treaty. Now, that's not the only remedy that is available, but that's the only one under the double tax treaty, which is where, it's probably the most logical place to start for how to...
Perfect, Lauren. Thanks so much for sharing all this information with our audience. Really thankful. We also intended to ask you some questions about what other issues, legislation, etc., is coming up next year in the United States. But I assume we are somewhat out of time. And also, you said there's not too much interesting stuff going on, especially because of the election year that basically blocks everyone. So I think I'm left with saying thank you so much for sharing, and talk to you next time, next podcast.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, thank you so much, Lauren, and hope to talk to you soon again.
Of course, yes, we will do this again.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye, everyone.